Hey everyone, welcome to 10 Movies, the podcast where we go through the work of one actor through 10 of their movies. If you're just joining us, this is a bonus episode.
It's a bonus episode! It's free, unlike all the others.
So far this season, we have done a bunch of Matthew McConaughey movies.
10 of them, to be exact, per the name of the podcast.
And you might have noticed that we haven't done Dazed and Confused, and every single person that we talk to when we tell them that we're doing this show and we're doing it about Matthew McConaughey goes, are you going to do Dazed and Confused?
We had a very principled stance at one point that Dazed and Confused, while certainly McConaughey's breakout role, is not really a McConaughey movie. He's kind of a bit part character actor in the film. But then we realized only a couple hundred people listen to this podcast. Why on earth would we not talk about the one thing everyone's interested in?
Yeah, we really were badgered into doing this, but we are grateful.
How can we make the podcast less interesting to fewer people, we thought. But then we had a change of heart.
And then we decided to do Dazed and Confused.
Dazed and Confused, McConaughey's breakout role.
The 1993 film directed by Richard Linklater. I have a lot of thoughts about this film, and that's actually a lie. I don't really have a lot of thoughts about this film. I have watched it before, and then we just rewatched it. And it is not a Matthew McConaughey movie, per se.
It's not really an anybody movie. It's just a sort of sprawling, loosey-goosey. It's great. I really enjoyed rewatching it.
I did not. I think I've aged out of it.
That's possible. It was a lot funnier than I remembered it being.
But McConaughey's role in it, even though it's not really a big role, is very defining for him. Because this is what kind of launched his career. And it is the persona that he was basically stuck with forever.
Yeah, all right is the definitely people's watchword for McConaughey. And this is the role that he's done, you know, 20, 30 years worth of movies, and yet people love him and know him for this one tiny role.
Yeah, in an indie film, right? Like, it's not like this movie is a giant blockbuster or anything. It has attained cult status.
Cult classic, yeah, for sure.
Probably because of how famous now McConaughey is, right? Like, there's a little bit of, like, looking backward and being like, oh, Matthew McConaughey was in this?
A lot of other big-name stars, like Ben Affleck, who I don't remember was in the movie, and he's, like, the main villain. And yeah, a ton of others. But yeah, I think McConaughey is probably the best remembered of this movie for this role. What is it about this role that people love so much? Why do people keep yelling at us and talking on the internet about Dazed and Confused?
So in the film, he plays Wooderson?
Wooderson, I believe. It's tough to say.
Tough to say.
Especially when all the characters are drawling from Texas. It's just...
For the longest time, I thought it was Waterson. And I was like, what are they trying to say? But he plays Wooderson, basically the jock that never really left high school.
Yeah, he's like an early 20s guy who still hangs out at the high school spots and hangs out with the high school kids and is into the high school girls.
creepily into the high school girls.
Creepily into the high school girls, for sure. And do you feel that, and I believe you mentioned that you feel like McConaughey's role here, his work here, has not aged super well politically?
Not even politically. I think that he's meant to be a little creepy and a little bit sad anyway. Like, you can see initially why people might think he's cool, right? Because he does have this, like, cool laid backness to him.
You can see why the kids in the movie think he's cool. Yeah.
Yes, I think that's an important distinction. But he, you know, he is a little sad and he's a little creepy, and especially the line about high school girls where he's like, you know, the thing about high school girls is that I get older, but they stay the same age.
every line of his in the movie is somehow iconic. I remember every line the guy does in the movie.
Yeah, he has like four of them, but he's made them iconic. So yeah, it has not aged so well because you're like, that guy should actually just not be allowed near high school campuses.
But here's the thing, and perhaps, you know, I don't think enough people listen to this podcast to cancel me, but I think that the role, the Wooderson character, I think, so the other kids in the movie, they think this guy's awesome, right? Because he's so cool, he's 23, he's got a job, he can buy him beer, whatever. I think in the movie, though, as a viewer, the way the character is probably written, I think you were encouraged to find him a figure of fun, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he is a loser, right? He's objectively a loser. He's 23, he's hanging out with 18-year-olds, 16-year-olds. But I think McConaughey actually brings, there's something, like, he actually kind of has this, like, wisdom and this zen. Like, he's not nearly as creepy as that guy should be. And I think that's what McConaughey does for this role that elevates it.
So we have talked about this before, which is that McConaughey has this, like, inherent likability that is just present in all of his characters.
Yeah, his surfer charisma is at the heart of, is somehow infusing Wooderson.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that while I found especially his line readings just like a little too icky sometimes, he definitely didn't have dude riding around in a van like trying to grab kids vibe, which you could very much get from this character.
Yeah, we've talked before about McConaughey's ability to finally straddle that thin line between being like aggressive but not threatening, right?
Yes.
He's very male, he's very entitled, he's very confident, but he's not like threatening or toxic or creepy. And even though he's playing a threatening, toxic, creepy character, it doesn't really come across that way. Like, you don't feel like Wooderson would ever like force himself on someone without their consent. He's just too like tranquilo for that.
Yeah, there's this there's one scene in the film where he kind of rolls up to a high school girl who's in her car, and she's
with her two nerd friends.
With her two friends, and he's like, "Hey, do you have a ride to the party?" And she's like, "I'm in my car," and he's just not fazed by it at all. And again, this is what he does: like, he just hits on everyone and everything, and that's established in this film too.
And even that scene, he tells her, like, he's like, "Yeah, maybe you shouldn't bring your two nerd friends." But it's somehow like that's super rude and hateful to say that to these guys can hear him. But it's not somehow. It's not. It's like that's just who that guy is. He's just, you know, be a lot cooler if you did, man.
I think you phrased it really well where you say he's just not threatening about it. He's like, "Yeah, I'm flirting, but I'm not trying to be aggressive about it."
Yeah, and like, even though this was McConaughey's like first ever significant role, like all of the McConaughey text is already written there, right?
Yes.
He's just like, yeah, he's aggressive, but he's not threatening. He's ridiculously confident, even though maybe he doesn't have any real reason to be.
He doesn't, right?
This guy shouldn't be confident, but he's just oozes confidence. He's just like, "Yeah, man, all right, slide it on.
It's basically the first iteration of EdTV. He's just a loser with no reason to be this happy about his life, but yet he is.
Yeah, he's very pleased with himself, this guy.
So what I see here in Dazed and Confused is basically all of the criteria that we listed for the iconic Matthew McConaughey role.
Yeah, so as we wrap up the 10 movies podcast, I agree with you. I think him as Wooderson, all the great McConaughey strengths are on display, even at this you know, pupil stage. Pupil stage? Larval stage?
Larval?
Even at this larval stage. What are those strengths?
So we've got the smolder.
The smolder, and he smolders in this movie. Yeah.
He smolders in the screen test. I watched the screen test, and he's just like, you can't take your eyes off of him.
And do you feel he smolders in all the films? And to some extent, he does.
Yeah, I even said that in Dallas Buyers Club, right?
Yeah,
like he had a weird sexy smolder.
Mm-hmm.
Smolder. Probably the only film where I don't see a smolder is...
Well, Sing, when he was an animated koala bear.
That might be it.
So the smoldering, the drawl, the Texas drawl.
Yes.
And at this point, he was just a dude from Texas. He wasn't even like in L.A.
He's got the laid backness.
The laid backness, yep.
We see that. Confidence.
Confidence coming out of his pores.
And his eyes. Does he have the big goggly eyes in this?
No. So a signal McConaughey acting trick from the early part of his career was Google-eyed intensity to signal that something is happening to his character that is surprising or bad. Wooderson does not do that, but then there's no real call for him to. Like, nothing happens in this movie. They all just drive around and talk to each other all night.
Which sounds about right for Linklater films.
So the smoldering we have, the drawling, the confidence, the good looks. There's two other traits, I feel like, that are central to McConaughey.
Go ahead. What are those?
Optimism.
Yes.
And Americanness.
I agree with both of them.
Like, when you just consider the roles he takes, him as, you know, performer, I do think there is a fundamental Americanness to, like, his whole body of work, right? The optimism and the, like, "Oh, everything's going to kind of work out." Like, those are, like, these, even if they're not Central American traits, they're traits that we as Americans like to think that we embody. I think that he is, he's this projected Americanness, right? Like, all the things we want to be. We want to be, like, tough but cool and laid back and optimistic and can do. And we want to be, you know, Southern and working class and but also still have a mansion and a fancy car. Everything that he is and all his roles, that's what we all want to be.
It doesn't actually matter that he's very specifically also Texan, right? Like, you would think that geographicness to him would be alienating and
plays all these other different parts, like you just said.
I mean, there is that, like, stupid, ugly strain of, like, real America is some very specific places. And I don't think McConaughey is about that at all. But, like, Texas is one of those places, right? Yeah. I think when you think of, like, the heartland and the true America, Texas is on that list. All right, here we are at the end of our McConaughey season of the 10 Movies podcast. The 10 movies, the titular 10 movies of the podcast. We watched A Time to Kill, where he plays sweaty and smoldering Southern lawyer Jake Brigance. We watched The Wedding Planner, where he plays, I don't remember the character's name, but he was an adulterous two-timing jerk. We watched Reign of Fire, where he plays unbelievably buff, bald Van Zant, the American dragon killer. We watched Sahara, where he plays the unfortunately titled action-adventure hero Dirk Pitt.
Dirk Pitt.
Interstellar, where he plays the...
Cooper.
The noble but lonely space dad at the heart of a vast interstellar epic. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, where he plays a...
sleazy ad guy.
Yeah, rakish but sleazy ad guy. Who knows what the character was named. Sing, where he plays Buster Moon, the animated koala bear.
Your favorite film.
One of my favorite films. Dallas Buyers Club, where he plays Ron Woodruff, the formerly homophobic turned victim of AIDS, whose story unfolds before us. The Gentleman, where he plays Mickey Pearson, the weed drug lord of London.
The weed king
of all of England, really. And then Ed TV, where he plays Ed, who is on TV.
So out of all of these films that we watch, and you did a very good job of summarizing.
Thank you. I was looking at the list of episodes on my phone.
Which role do you think is actually kind of closest to Matthew McConaughey? Going back to our Keanu season, we were able to kind of split him up into rom-com Keanu, action Keanu, and then we each picked one role that felt like definitive Keanu.
I have no memory of that.
Maybe I'm making it up. I don't know.
I think you might be. I also have a terrible memory.
But
do you
have a like definitive McConaughey, or do you have a strain that you're like, man, I wish like he had done more of this?
That's an excellent question. So I would say that of the movies we watched, I have no idea which is closest to Matthew McConaughey's true heart.
Right.
But the role that I think is most McConaughey-ish, Interstellar was the movie I enjoyed the most of everything we watched. Like I remember liking it, but you know, if you haven't listened to our Interstellar episode, it's just us screaming about how great it was for almost a full hour. I think though that is as disappointing and dumb as it was, Dirk Pitt in Sahara. Is that going to be yours too?
Yeah.
I think that is the most, the urtex of McConaughey. Why do you think that?
I was going to say that too because I
stole your thunder.
You did.
I'm sorry.
You're stepping all
over.
Well,
it's good that, you know, we're on the same page here. We've learned something.
Well, let me start by saying part of it is because of what I saw in The Gentleman. And I think you brought this up in The Gentleman, which was that he just was not well. It's not that he was not well suited to that role, but the dialogue that Guy Ritchie kind of wanted him to do was just not natural for him. And he did it well enough, but it was very much felt like Matthew McConaughey playing a different kind of role at a different time in his career.
Yeah, of these roles, that's the one you could most easily see being done by someone else without changing the movie or harming it.
Yeah, and then when I think like the opposite of that, it's kind of, you know, Sahara is just so much fun and he's so charismatic, he's so charming, and there's a little bit of acting in there too, right? He's not as wooden or as stiff as he is in some of his rom-com movies, but that Dirk Pitt, you know, sense of adventure and charm and everything that he's kind
of naturally
good at.
He's so American, he's so optimistic,
yeah.
He's so confident, he's so shirtless.
More of that because it's so quintessentially McConaughey.
Yeah, if they hadn't made that movie so badly, then it should have been a trilogy. And it would have been great. You know, it's not too late. Maybe it is too late. Do you feel like McConaughey and Zahn could revisit Sahara?
Yeah,
if
we're getting a Matrix 4, I think
that's
we can get a Sahara 2.
Matthew McConaughey, if you're out there, Steve Zahn, if you're out there, give it another chance, guys. I know you had your heart on this one. You sunk all your reputation into it. It probably broke your heart, but I think the world is ready for Sahara 2, the next Boogaloo. Sahara 2, back to the desert.
My question for you, do you like Matthew McConaughey more or less?
You should answer because the last time I stole your bit.
I will preemptively interrupt you because halfway through our Keanu season, I was like, I think I'm starting to hate Keanu.
Really?
No, not really. It was just like we had watched a lot of Keanu at that point. And I'm curious if you kind of walk away with appreciating Matthew McConaughey more or a little less.
So the last season of the 10 Movies podcast, although at the time it was not called the 10 Movies podcast, so it might be confusing if you go back and look for it. You should, though. They're great. We talked about Keanu Reeves. And I had the opposite of your experience there, where I had a... I mean, I remember going into that, I was like, oh, yeah, there's a couple good Keanu Reeves movies, but I don't want to watch 10 of this guy's movies. I learned to appreciate, he's in some ways a much more interesting figure than Matthew McConaughey. You know, probably less talented as an actor, maybe a lesser body of work, but I think he's kind of genuinely weird in some ways we discussed at great length. I gained a real appreciation for him over the course of watching those movies and talking about him. With McConaughey, I think I came into it thinking like, oh, yeah, he's, you know, I like that guy. I like a bunch of that guy's movies. And now I would say I like that guy and I like a bunch of that guy's movies. I don't think my opinion has changed at all.
Yeah, you don't have some kind of grand revelation about his work as an actor or anything like that.
No, do you?
I don't know if it's a grand revelation. I am more... I respect him a lot more just in terms of how long he's managed to like keep his career going and how he's managed to stay successful, transition past that long lull of just really bad films. Like the great Matthew McConaughey movies that we have seen have all been relatively recent, right? Like he hits his peak much later in life and he kind of just coasts on his good looks and stuff. So I have a lot more respect for him as basically someone who just... who's starting to do serious work, like probably like towards the tail end of his career.
Yeah, I think you can totally respect it. Yeah, that he just coasted on his persona and, you know, cash paychecks for 10 years. And then at some point in like his 40s decided like, oh, I'm going to make interesting movies and challenging movies. Yeah, and I think the movies like Interstellar and Dallas Buyers Club are movies where we really loved what he was doing as an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are definitely fairly recent.
Is there anything about Matthew McConaughey that we need to say that we haven't said over the course of now 11 episodes?
I mean, I feel like if you have put, you know, between 6 and 9 hours of audio about McConaughey out onto the public airwaves, you've probably covered all the ground. And yeah, I felt like when we did our Keanu season, we talked a lot about him and his persona. What is he doing in movies? And often it wasn't necessarily a good thing. But yeah, with McConaughey, I think maybe just because he's a stronger actor that... Yeah, there's a lot of these roles where like we thought he was really well suited to them, and it was hard to imagine someone else doing them. But yeah, at the same time, I don't know that it all like all the things we talked about earlier. He has this really strong, you know, persona and what he brings to a movie, but I don't know that it all adds up to anything more than like a whole bunch of movies, and some of them are pretty good.
Yeah, I agree with that, and that's not a bad thing though.
So McConaughey doesn't tell us anything about America and ourselves in the end.
I don't know. I think he does, actually. I think you pretty much nailed it earlier in the podcast, which is that I never really put that together, but that optimism and confidence is, like, really core to that identity.
We, as Americans, want to be Dirk Pitt.
I want to be Dirk Pitt.
Yeah.
I went on a long rant about it.
You did, and I encourage everyone to go back and listen to that one. But I feel like maybe, as Americans, we are actually that guy from The Wedding Planner.
The adulterous Dirk.
Yeah, he's a little sleazy.
His name's Steve.
It could be anything. You just made that up. Who knows? You know, and I would say to America, those of you who are listening, let's not be Steve. Going forward, it's a dark time. It's a perilous time. Let's not be Steve. Let's be Dirk Pitt.
Let's be Dirk Pitt.
Let's be Dirk Pitt.
And riding through the desert.
Riding through the desert on a repurposed abandoned aircraft with some kind of sail, and classic rock is playing, and Steve Zahn is making some wisecracks.
Oh, man. I love Steve Zahn.
That's the future liberals want.
We are done with this season.
We are done with this season.
But the good news is we have another season coming up.
Yes, we have another season coming up. The only thing anyone ever seems to want to talk about when they find out about this podcast or listen to it is like, who are you going to do next? And people have a lot of thoughts. I would encourage you, if you're out there listening, we have a Twitter feed. We're going to set up a Facebook feed because you have to have a Facebook thing. A lot of people don't do Twitter.
People's parents listen to
people's
this podcast.
So if you're somebody's parent out there, find us on Facebook, find us on Twitter. We would love to hear some feedback on what we should tackle in our next season. And also, may I say to the listeners before we go, we would love, love, love if you would also rate and review the podcast on the podcast listening application of your choice. Not because we seek validation and praise. In reality, both him and I have very, very strong senses of self. But because the robots that make all our decisions for us in modern America rely on that stuff to put a particular podcast above all the others. This podcast is so much better than most of the terrible podcasts out there. So we really would love it for you to leave a review, leave a rating, help us out, and not just help us out, help America out.
And also, thank you very much for joining us this season. We appreciate you turning us on in your cars, on your way to work, at the gym, while you're doing dishes or making dinner or however you spend your time these days. Thank you very much. It has been wonderful. A lot of people have reached out to us about what they like, what they don't like, and what they find shrill. So.
And may I say thank you to Matthew McConaughey for really 30 years of mostly enjoyable entertainment.
I agree. And hey, Brian.
Yes, yes, Emil.
Just keep living.
Yeah, just keep living. All right, all right, all right.
Thank you guys for listening.